This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 6:35. You are with Kelvin and Cam on the Evening Edition. And for our next story, we're talking about COVID-19, the outbreak, and how it might affect China's trade and infrastructure development plans. So let's maybe take a look first at some of China's Belt and Road initiatives in other nations. They are facing some challenges, and that's because of delays and lack of manpower and supplies.
Yes, so Chinese workers have been unable, in some cases, to return to work in countries like Bangladesh, Pakistan, as well as in African nations. This is due to governments restricting travel, shutdowns, quarantines, and so on.
And beyond that, there are other signs that paint a dimmer picture within China. So, for example, the China Development Forum, which is an annual gathering of business leaders and economists. It was supposed to happen next month, but that's been postponed indefinitely. And some businesses in China have remained closed for now, either to wait for more updates or because of a bit of bureaucracy, really, of pending detailed health plans they need to provide to authorities.
So we've been reading, Kelvin and myself, been reading a few pieces from, say, Time magazine,
SCMP.
South China Morning Post. And there's a connecting theme here, which is that, well, you know, China is suffering on the economic front, which may well be true because there have been shutdowns and ever since Chinese New Year, the delayed return to work. Mm-hmm. There's been... It's so hard to know if these stories are exaggerated, but there have been stories coming out of China of people talking about people from Wuhan as being unwelcome, and then there's the concern about the potential for the spread of this virus.
Yeah. I think it's maybe two ways, right? On the basis of the workers themselves who might have returned home during the Chinese New Year period, they might not be able to return. And also partially, besides travel restrictions, it's also likely because they have families, they have to take care of families, their children are still home. It's not only businesses that have closed shop, you know, schools. China recently extended the Chinese New Year celebrations, or rather the holiday, because this is an attempt to help control the spread of the virus. But at the same time, schools are also, some of them are not scheduled to resume until the 25th of February, some until even the first day of March. And I guess when they do, and when these workers from China are able to return to these countries, they are also sometimes facing, I think, the perception that they are stealing local jobs. So fueled together, added into the mix, is this outbreak that perhaps might affect how some people within these nations might view Chinese people coming back to work on these BRI projects.
Well, I'm not so sure about stealing jobs. I mean, there's certainly, when you go to a country like, say, Pakistan, and you offer X billion and you're going to build so many roads, etc., there's the sense that you're creating jobs. But there have been stories, say, from Sri Lanka in particular, where the being involved with a Belt and Road Initiative doesn't necessarily work to your financial advantage in the long term. But also coming out of this, the coronavirus, well, we don't call it that, it's COVID-19, is
yep.
it not? Coming out of this story is racism. Pure and simple,
yeah.
Toward Chinese people, be they from China or not,
yeah,
and also story within China of perhaps kind of fractures in the regional aspect of different language groups, but also looking at the communist state itself,
right,
and perhaps there has been an opportunity to criticize the state. The people are taking up, and quite openly.
Yeah, and I think that might be due to just frustrations, just perhaps what's seen as slightly slower steps to handle the crisis immediately, right? To handle and properly give guidance to, you know, not only health officials, but those on the ground as well. And, you know, even I think in general, though, I think there is a lot of interest in wanting to get back to work, to get China moving again,
yeah.
simply because China plays such a huge role in the global economy, in the global trade. And I think so long as the country remains on hold, it's still made, it's still really a question of whether how much longer can, you know, the world sort of face this downturn in the economy, right? Because we also see the IMF as well as local economists here perhaps saying that it's still a bit too early to see if the coronavirus outbreak will have a large impact on the economy. But right now, it's still being described as mild.
Yes. And I have to say that the pieces that I've read, especially the Time magazine piece, did make me kind of think this is kind of gloating a little at China's expense.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the, yes, very successful economy, but also this very secretive state that does not enjoy ever admitting failure, now having to face failure. Mm-hmm. And I felt the Time magazine piece was rather gleefully pointing out all those things.
We're also going to look at China's Belt and Road initiatives in other countries as well as Malaysia. And to help us dive a little bit deeper into this topic is Lau Zhengzhou, Research Manager in Economics and Business at IDEAS. Zhengzhou, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good evening.
How much disruption has occurred in the Belt Road Initiative since the start of the outbreak?
Well, we have seen a certain disruption to countries, especially with shared borders with China, for example, Vietnam. You have seen workers being barred at the customs gate. They couldn't pass through the border. Cargoes are not being allowed to move across the border. So you do see some disruption in that sense. But I'm afraid to say that the Belt and Road Initiative is also a political project as much as economics. It is here to stay. I think there is a lot of political will on the part of the Chinese government to keep the project up and running.
Yes. If though we have no idea how long this outbreak will last, but if it does continue over periods of time, month, 2 months, 6 months, what kind of effects and delays would you see, imagine, on projects under the Belt and Road Initiative across different countries?
So I think for the Belt and Road projects, most of them are construction-driven projects. So in this case, you're talking about investment in railroads, in construction, in casinos even in Indochina. They do employ a lot of Chinese workers and use a lot of Chinese materials, but these are non-tradable goods. I said they will stop jobs. The progress will be stalled for a while, but they have to still continue it. It's quite different from goods and services that are tradable. So I think in that sense, I think construction-driven projects will still continue.
Right. And just, I guess, continuing what you said earlier about travel restrictions not being allowed back into the countries that they were previously working in. So by some estimates, over 40% to 45% of China's adult population is under mandatory or self-imposed quarantine. So seeing that many of the BRI projects also use Chinese workers, is it likely that countries, other nations will welcome them back?
Well, I'm not too sure if the estimate is that high, 40 to 45% of the Chinese adult population. There's no way that I can verify it.
This comes from Forbes, so, you know.
Right. So, but then, look, I think the workers would want to get back to work, especially workers who work in factories. They are paid on a daily basis, many of them. But you do see companies in China who have delayed restarting of production. One good example will be Foxconn, a key supplier to Apple products. So the public health experts, the authorities in Shenzhen, where they are based, they actually barred the company from restarting work. So due to, you know, the ongoing inspections and monitoring to ensure that it is ready and suitable to restart work. So I think companies are also quite skeptical about restarting production. But if you look at the overall Chinese footprint, economic footprint in this region, you do have Belt and Road projects, but you also have private sector businesses that are not necessarily related to Belt and Road. So this we will have to look at the kind of industry and skills required in the jobs, because you do have companies like Huawei. These are engineers. They are Chinese top-skilled management leaders. Mm. You also have industries like CRRC, for example, where they manufacture trains. These are staff, these are employees that you can't just substitute away because they are trained in that particular trade. But for construction-related projects, which typically require lower skilled employees, many of these projects, they would still prefer to have their own people to work in. So I think we might see some of these projects that there will be a lot of mediation between the both countries' government to work out a way so that they can return to work.
We've been talking about the region and China and also countries like Pakistan. What about Malaysia? Do you foresee any effects upon Malaysian economy with regard to China's the outbreak in China?
Specifically to BRI or overall, speaking generally?
Well, generally, just Malaysian trade.
Okay. So I think from what we've gathered, I think for exports and services, especially those which require people-to-people interaction, so talking about businesses in exhibition, in conferences, in education, in hospitality, those are probably services that will be affected the most, at least in the beginning. Then we'll have to see how bad the situation really is, because the impact on then the manufacturing, where we produce intermediate goods. If you look at statistics, 86% of our manufactured goods is exported, and especially on E&E components, a lot of them are bound for China for further value add. So the disruption on the supply chain will also be quite serious if the coronavirus gets worse. Then, if this thing gets more prolonged, we will have to question things like investment outlook, how pessimistic the investors are, because there could be decisions to cut back on investments, on spending, and then you will then see multiplier effects across your second-tier and third-tier suppliers. So it really depends on how bad the situation is. It's quite early for us to have a clear judgment.
Right, and of course, we saw the China-US trade war being a significant topic last year. What impact does the outbreak have on the trade war?
Well, I think China may want to consider soften its stance. In fact, after signing the Phase 1 deal, these two countries have, in a way, cooled down on their trade talks. And whatever happened now in China may also impact US. So there has to be some form of coordination, not just between these two countries, but also more broadly, the G7 and the G20 countries as well. I think we should also be looking at their central bankers as well. Is there going to be a more coordinated statement that's coming out and say, we will step in if the situation calls for it? Because at the end of the day, it's about projecting confidence to investors so that we do not make rash decisions to roll back on investment and spending.
The world economy changes and has changed since the SARS epidemic. Do we see any differences with the outbreak now compared to SARS?
Well, SARS, really, you're talking about 2003 when SARS happened. At that point of time, China contributed some 4% to the global GDP, it's 16% now. So the size is really so much bigger, and the qualitative nature of the contribution, that is quite important. Because in the past, we know China as the world's maybe low-cost manufacturing hub. But today, many of these companies, they are anchor firms, which with very innovative products, and a lot, and they are play a very key part in the supply chain. So if this cog within the chain is not performing, then it affects the upstream and the downstream. So the qualitative nature is also quite different. So at that point of time, Malaysia did respond with a stimulus package, and talk of the town is that we might see a stimulus package next month as well.
Right, and one last question for you. And since we are also seeing within the region and also with China, we technically have a very close-knit economy together. We are very closely tied in that sense. Looking just within the ASEAN region, who is likely to be hit the hardest and who is less likely to be hit?
Well, this will have to depend on how compatible the economic structure is between China and ASEAN countries. I would say countries maybe like Malaysia, Vietnam, with our export-oriented economy and our E&E component, we play a very important role in the E&E and technology supply chain. Whereas some other countries, for example, Indo-China countries or Philippines, perhaps they're more inward and there's very little compatibility in terms of economic structure. There's very little that China needs for them in terms of manufacturing of electronic components. I mean, I kept repeating electronic components because China is the biggest producer in Chinese in electronic components, and China is also probably contributes 1/3 of the world's component parts in automotive industry. So the industries that they are strong in, and for Vietnam, Malaysia, where we play a key role in feeding them with input, intermediate goods, we will probably be more tightly knitted. And maybe lesser for some other countries.
Zhengzhou, thank you so much again for speaking with us.
Thank you very much.
That was Lau Zhengzhou's research manager in economics and business at IDEAS, talking to us about how COVID-19 might affect us, the economy, as well as China's trade and infrastructure development plans. Now, if you have any thoughts on this story, you can, of course, send them in. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. And you can WhatsApp 018-789-8899, especially if you happen to work in a company or you have a business that works very closely with China. We'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, we have some music by David Bowie, Ziggy Stardust. You're listening to The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.